Now, a broad voting rights and election reform bill known as H.R. 1 passed the House of Representatives on Wednesday with almost all Democrats voting in favor. The bill would establish automatic voter registration, mandate nonpartisan redistricting commissions, require more transparency in campaign donations, and more. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said on the steps of the Capitol last week that the bill is needed as Republicans are considering voting restrictions on the state level around the country.
We must win this race, this fight for this bill, because it at the same time as we are gathering here to honor our democracy across the country, over 200 bills are being put together, provisions are putting forth to suppress the vote.
The bill faces a tougher road in the U.S. Senate. It would need the support of all Democrats and probably changes to the filibuster rule. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think are the most important voting issues facing the country right now? Should we be thinking about protecting and expanding access or limiting it? What do you think about the voting rights bill that just passed the House? If you support it, would it be worth eliminating the filibuster if that's what it took to pass? And you have questions about what all this stuff does? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Lana Atkison is a professor of political science and director of the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy at the University of New Mexico. Lana, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, this is coming out of the 2020 elections. And before we go to this federal reform effort, can you talk about what you're seeing at the state level with lots and lots of changes being proposed in the works in state legislatures to the way we vote?
Right. We're seeing a sort of unusual set of bills being put forth in states across the country that are sort of pulling back at least some of the things that happened during COVID. In some cases, pulling back from some other things that they had put forward before.
This federal legislation, before we get into the specifics, one big overarching change is it would insert the federal government into state election systems substantially more than it has been in the past. Usually this is left up to states to determine how voting happens. How big a change would this be?
Well, this would be a really big change because it would be a uniform system of voting for federal elections. And that's probably an important first step if we want to move to some sort of national popular vote, because the election laws are so different across states that there's equal protection issues. So this is probably, you know, if we want to move towards that, this is probably a good first step. That doesn't mean that all of the provisions in the bill are good or that I personally like them, but it does mean that thinking about what kinds of things we'd want in a national election, what kinds of things we'd want to be consistent across states, what we need to have consistent to create equal protection is an important discussion to start having.
Let's look at some of the specific changes now in this bill that passed the House. An automatic voter registration system in every state. What do you think of that idea? How would it work?
You know, a number of states have AVR systems. They usually use state agencies. This would expand that to universities and colleges as well. They would be required to give people the option to vote. Actually, it's an opt-out process. So everybody gets the option to participate, and they actually have to say that they want to opt out to get opt out. So it would definitely increase voter registration across the country.
And then there's the idea of nonpartisan redistricting commissions. This is an issue here in Wisconsin, of course, and many other states. Accusations that whichever party draws the map gerrymanders the districts. This would be a big change. How would redistricting be handled in states under this bill?
You know, that's really hard to tell. We don't have a lot of states at the time that have independent redistricting commissions. I think in the last cycle, there was maybe only one state that really had it. And it didn't really turn out to show any differences. So the literature so far doesn't seem to suggest that this is a panacea to the problem, but maybe there would be some benefits from that. I think that you need some sort of guideposts about, you know, what a commission should do. Is it looking for creating contiguous districts? Is it, you know, contiguous areas and making sure that, you know, natural barriers are kept together? Or is it about creating more competitive districts, which might end up making districts looking really weird and not kept together? So there needs to be some mandates in thinking about what what that would look like under the hood.
Another change that's gotten a lot of attention, the bill would require more transparency on political donations. So, in effect, if I have a political group that's spending political money in certain ways, I might have to disclose my donors. And I know that's been opposed by groups on the right and on the left in the past. What do you think of that that change?
Yeah, you know, from my personal perspective, I think that disclosure is a good thing. You know, people should have to disclose who they're supporting and how they're giving their political money. So that seems like a really basic idea to me. I think the bill itself has sort of these rather high limits of $10,000 or more that you have to spend. So it wouldn't include small donors. So I'm not sure that it's quite expansive enough in terms of shedding the light.
We're talking to Lana Atkison, professor of political science at the University of New Mexico, looking at H.R. 1, this big set of proposals to change voting rules in the country past the U.S. House. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a change you want to see, a change you don't want to see? Do you want the federal government stepping in and giving more guidance or taking authority away from states when it comes to setting rules of how we vote, when we vote, and that sort of thing? Call 800-642-1234. No Republican votes for this in the House, likely to be the case in the Senate, too. I want to give a listen to Senator Mike Lee of Utah talking on Fox News with his thoughts on the bill.
This is a bill as if written and held by the devil himself. This takes all sorts of decisions that the federal government really has no business making. It takes them away from the states, makes them right here in Washington, D.C. by Congress.
And that's going to be, I think, a big point of opposition to this. As we said earlier, states have been in charge of this stuff. I think states, in many cases, want to stay in charge of this stuff. And a lot of people at the federal level will want to keep that. Lana, why can you talk about that argument that states should, in fact, keep authority over these decisions?
Well, you know, states are the place that where this has been for the last, you know, since the inception of the Republic. So it certainly has a long history that it's in state governments that decide these things. And states actually know their constituents and know their state, right? They know what their state has. So do you have enough connectivity, for example, in your state to have same day registration everywhere to ensure that there's no problems with processing someone's vote and not putting it into a provisional vote? So there is, you know, a long history, and there is the fact that legislators know their states and they know their constituents and they know the intricacies of what's going on in those states. And so that does mean that they have are better suited to understanding the needs for both access and integrity to the ballot.
I know the 15th Amendment says, hey, states, you can't discriminate on the basis of race when it comes to voting. And hey, Congress, you have the authority to step in when states do that. I don't know. How much does that constitutionally empower Congress to say, hey, yeah, no, we do need to set some of these policies at the federal level?
Well, the federal government has the right to set the standards for federal elections. So, you know, there could be, this could create a two-tiered system, I guess, theoretically, where you'd have one set of rules for federal elections, one set of rules for state elections. I mean, theoretically, you could have states put their state elections at different times than federal elections. They don't have to be every 2 years for other kinds of down ballot offices in the state. So, you know, but certainly the Congress, right, has the opportunity and the right to set parameters for congressional elections and for federal elections.
We're talking to Lana Atkison, director of the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy at the University of New Mexico. We're looking at H.R. 1, the voting and elections bill that's passed the House and now heads to the Senate. Good chance it won't pass there under current rules anyway. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of the items in this bill? Automatic voter registration, nonpartisan redistricting. Do you want to see the Senate pass this, even if it required getting rid of the filibuster? Do you think the federal government should set more standard rules for how states run their elections, or should it be up to states like Wisconsin to write the rules? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Lana Atkison, professor of political science at the University of New Mexico, looking at the H.R. 1 voting bill that passed the U.S. House this week and what it would mean for how we run elections if, big if, the Senate signs off on it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you'd like to see to the way we do elections in Wisconsin and around the country? Whether or not they're in this bill, what do you think needs to change, if anything? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go to your calls now. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. So I was reading about this bill today, and I think it has some I'm in support of pretty much everything in the bill. I think whether or not this passes, goes through the Senate, I think this bill or something like it is necessary to maintain the health of our democracy. The federal government, I think, at this point needs to step in and say all these things, all these impediments and roadblocks that are being put up to registration and to voting, things like ID laws, getting rid of same-day registration, other changes need to stop. I think that this is a good thing, and I think that this should pass. Whether it does or not is another question, but I think the federal government stepping in is a good thing. I think they should take the lead from this and do more, like maybe revamp on the unemployment system. So,
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Lana, Michael's worried that the changes that we're seeing in states will bring about unfair impediments to being able to vote. Are you concerned about that, looking at the various, and there's a lot of different ones, laws proposed around the country?
You know, I mean, in some cases, it might affect things a little bit. In other cases, it's probably not going to affect things too much. You know, a lot of people voting is a fairly easy thing to do. It's fairly accessible to most voters. That doesn't mean there aren't any impediments or they're not cost to voters. But for example, what we've seen most recently with voter ID cases is that states that have implemented them, they've seen sort of this backlash of effect, which has actually increased voter participation. So sometimes things don't work out like you think, and maybe they're mobilizing effects and not demobilizing effects to them. So I always think, be careful what you wish for. You never know what's going to happen. So I don't think they would have a lot of effects. They might have, you know, marginal effects.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Rosa is with us in Waterford. Rosa, hi.
Hello. So two things. One, my concern with this automatic registration, how will it weed out people that are not qualified to vote, non-citizens, say? Secondly, it's interesting. I'm in Wisconsin, and I received two mail-in ballots that I did not request. So this was the first year ever there was a mail-in ballot, which is different than the absentee ballot. Absentee is what you request. I'm curious to know if this new proposal in H.R. 1, which I'm against, will kind of have that mail-in ballot mentality where we'll send it to everyone and we won't check to see if you're qualified or not or how many households receive this this ballot. Because I think that's why we had more votes than people voted for, because people received 2-3 ballots in the household.
Rosa, thanks a lot for the call. And I'll correct that. We did not have more votes in Wisconsin than people who voted or could vote. There was a lot of misinformation going on around about that. But Lana, to her points, first of all, a concern about automatic voter registration, registering people who aren't eligible to vote.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the provisions in the bill are about that. I do know that there are provisions so that if people who are not eligible to vote do get registered, that it's no fault of their own and that it can't be held against them. So I do know that that's in the bill. I don't know how, it was actually one of my questions, how they go about sort of sifting through to make sure ineligible voters aren't on the rolls. There is no, on her second question though, that it would not allow for universal mail-in voting where we would just, every state would mail out ballots to everyone and then send them back. Absentee rules for ballot requests would still be part of the process in those states that have that. There are states that where you can become on a permanent early voting list. But it would not mandate that. It would mandate that all states have the opportunity for no excuse voting, which many, you know, a bunch of states actually don't do that. In fact, New York, for example, until COVID happened, didn't have no excuse voting. A lot of the older states that came into the union early didn't have those kinds of rules and changed them for COVID. Some of them have kept them, like New York City. They've changed all their New York State. Other places like Massachusetts just made it a special case for COVID, but they're not going to continue with that. So
thanks for calling in, Rosa. We'll go to Andy now in Manitowoc. Andy, hello.
Yes, I just wanted to say that isn't this H.R. 1 taking the state's rights away and basically saying that by federalizing it, we are giving more power to the federal government and taking it away from our local government, which, as I've heard in all my civics days, is that local government is where you want most of the power or authority to lie, since it's the local people that should be doing this rather than some central government in Washington.
Andy, thanks for the call. Thanks a lot for the call, Andy. Alana, I mean, this would definitely shift the balance of election power to the federal government if it were passed. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. This is definitely a move to federalize and make consistent rules across states.
Thanks a lot for that call. And I wanted to ask you, Lana, if something like this were to pass, and again, tall order in the Senate, but could states or would states, do you think, be likely to sue then the federal government saying, hey, no, you don't get to take this authority away from us?
Oh, absolutely. States would. There'd be some sort of lawsuit among many states pushing back on, you know, federalization of the elections.
Let's go to Peter now in Madison. Peter, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I haven't read everything, so I can't say I agree with everything in the bill, but you mentioned something about earlier about who knows if then states would hold their own elections at a different time. And that got me thinking, even if there were nonpartisan redistricting, would the states then possibly be able to make their own districts for state office?
Interesting, Peter. Thanks for the call. So, yeah, if it affected federal, would we have different districts at the state and federal levels, I guess, Lana?
Yeah, we could. I mean, we already have different levels at the state level because it's just a different number of legislative sure. seats and all of that kind of stuff. So we definitely, and so you could have the state legislature do one and the independent redistricting commission do the one for the federal races. That is completely a possibility that states could do if that were to happen.
Peter, thanks for that call. We'll bring on Dave now, calling from Sussex. Dave, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got two quick points. Number one, we are the United States of America. The state's rights to do what they will within their own state laws is imperative to the freedom and the liberties of our country. That's number one. Tyranny comes from the top. Keep your hands off our state's rights. Number two, H.R. 1 is a horrible bill designed to cheat. You talk about fair and honest elections. Let's have a fair and honest election. Let's get rid of early voting and all this other crap. Mail-in voting is the worst thing you could possibly do. Quit being deceitful and dishonest about this bill. Shame on you.
Dave, I'm not sure who the you was in that sentence, but Dave, worried, as others are, that H.R. 1 and early voting, mail-in voting, make cheating in elections easier. Lana, do they?
Well, it's certainly true that there's this tension between access and integrity in elections. And every time you sort of increase the access, you increase the opportunity for more fraud. And although we don't see a lot of fraud in elections, where we do see fraud, it does happen to be in absentee balloting more often than in in-person voting. You know, I think that early voting is really a critical thing to think about for states and localities as they, you know, as elections continue to change and grow, it really relieves pressure on election day. A lot of people like to vote early because they can't go on Tuesdays to vote. And so it increases people's options. You know, I'm a real proponent of, you know, early voting. I think it really decreases the lines on election days. So there's a lot of really positive things about early voting.
As we wrap up, Lana, I think it can be tough to rewrite election laws, maybe even ones that everybody would agree on, because there's always going to be the suspicion, is this going to benefit you, the other side, more than it does me and my side? Does that make it tough to come up with reasonable changes to our election laws?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, you know, especially if it's not a bipartisan bill. I mean, I think that this is really important legislation to think about and to move forward, but we really need to move forward in a bipartisan way on that. It may not be possible. So, you know, that's going to be a problem, but it needs to be a bill that considers the needs and perceptions of both sides in the voting process, because really an election needs to be built so that the losers feel that there's a lot of integrity in it. And that's something we need to keep in mind as we move forward.
Lana, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Lana Atkison is professor of political science and director of the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy at the University of New Mexico. She joined us for a look at what's in the Voting and Elections Bill passed this week by the U.S. House and waiting for it to be tackled by the U.S. Senate, where it's expected to face a much tougher struggle.